The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, we're starting today with a music video. And although the song is good, it's better if you can watch the video. So, fire up the YouTube or the Twitter or the Twitch or the Facebook, and here we go.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a nearly successful coup that started at the end of Constitution Avenue.
To the Capitol.
A congressman named Loudermilk, a MAGA guy obscure, led 12 of his constituents on a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. One of the guys who was on that tour, who'd learned his way around, came back with the mob the very next day and stormed the Capitol grounds.
We're coming in like white on rice.
It wasn't just a protest that got somehow out of hand, but a violent insurrection meticulously planned.
All hell is going to break loose tomorrow.
The president, who would be king, conspired to make damn sure the rioters would lay siege that day on a three-hour tour. A three-hour tour. The ship of state was nearly wrecked by the lawlessness and guile of Louder Milligan, the skipper too, the millionaire and the wife, the movie star, the professor and Marianne, here on Mutineers Isle.
Mutineers Isle, that is Roy Zimmerman, and he has been doing this kind of musical commentary, entertainment, parody work for a long, long time. He's been at it, longer than I've been such a fan of these parodists. Anyway, so Roy Zimmerman, it hadn't released anything in many months, and that one popped up yesterday, perfect timing, as the big hearing on that three-hour tour is all set for tonight. I hope you've got extra popcorn, because I know I do. So anyway, that song just was released yesterday, and a listener was kind enough to send it to me. And, I love that stuff. And so, I noticed that Roy Zimmerman is on tour. I mean, he's in Southern California, so he's touring Southern California, but he's got a new album out and all that. So I emailed him yesterday and I said, come on show. So bottom line is he's coming on the show. He'll probably be on one day next week. So we'll have fun with him. Okay. So big day here in America tonight is it's the season finale of the January 6th hearings. It's not the series finale. The series continues, but the season, these first eight hearings will end tonight with, from all accounts, a blockbuster. So tomorrow, we're basically going to spend the entire hour reviewing what happened. I know. So I've done it in the past, when the hearings were in the daytime, because a lot of people work during the day and can't watch it live. But I think there are going to be enough revelations tonight, enough sort of earth-shattering moments it'll be a good way to spend a Friday. But today is Thursday. Howie Klein is usually here on Thursdays. He's out today. He'll be out next week, and then he'll be back with us. So since Howie, always brings on candidates that Blue America has endorsed, I thought today we'd sort of continue in the tradition. Last week I started introducing you and me, frankly, to the candidates who are running here in Florida, in my district. I was in the 22nd district, but thanks to the census and redistricting, I'm now in the 23rd. Ted Deutsch, the current congressman, is not running for re-election. He's accepted a job with an organization, so it's an empty seat. And so there are six Democrats vying for the nomination. I've invited all six of them on. We've so far had two. And today we'll have two more. And then I've got another one I'm taping tomorrow. Out of the six, only one has not responded to my outreach to, you know, I invited them all on the show. And most of them got back to me like almost instantly, right? The only one that hasn't is the front runner in the race. And what's really galling is yesterday I sent, you know, what I said is going to be my third and final attempt. I'll probably keep trying because, you know, I'm diligent that way. But what's so funny is I get a text a little while ago, and it's go figure. It says, this isn't even today's. Today is what, July 21st. Hi, Nicole. This is Democrat Jared Moskowitz. I'm running for Congress to fight back the extremist Republican agenda and continue the legacy of my friend Ted Deutch. When vote-by-mail ballots arrive this week, I'd be honored to earn your support. And he goes on and on. So I responded. I said, I've been trying to contact your office to schedule an interview. I'm a progressive radio host, and every other candidate in the race not only responded, but they already scheduled or appeared. And I get crickets from your office. You want my vote? Don't ignore me. Doesn't mean he'll get my vote, but, you know, I just find it curious. Anyway, so I guess when you're that confident, you don't have to respond to every, you know, little radio person who calls, but that would be a mistake. All right. So today we have two. Later on in the hour, we're going to hear from Alan Ellison, who is a businessman. He's never held elected office before, but he's run before. And you'll meet him a little later in the hour. But we're going to begin today with a young man. And when I say young man, I mean a young man. His name is Michelangelo Hamilton. And frankly, somebody, a listener, contacted me about him a few weeks back, and I looked into him and I said, you know, actually, and this is before I decided to invite everybody on the show so I could make an informed decision. When you're going to vote, you should make an informed decision. And so, but I looked him up and I thought, well, this guy really, well, let's meet him and I'll explain to you my problem. The first one being that Michelangelo Hamilton is too young to legally hold the office. Hey, Michelangelo, first of all, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's nice to meet you. Now, you're 23?
I am currently 21 years old, 22 years old, I'm sorry. And I'll be 23 when I hold elected office. I would be breaking the record unseen in this country for over 200 years.
Right, but isn't there, just like you have to be 35 to be president, I think you have to be 25 to serve in the House of Representatives, don't you?
That is correct. In the Constitution, it does say you have to be 25, but we're going based off of a 200-year precedent. Also, in an open seat race, Representative Claiborne from Tennessee in the 1800s, around 1797, ran for Andrew Jackson's seat when he left Congress. He won. He won re-election again when he was 24, and the House decided to vote to seat him in both occasions. So I believe that the people's will should be heard if I do win the nomination and I do win the general election. It's taxation without representation if they deny hundreds and thousands of people their duly elected representation. So
Wait a minute. Taxation without representation, please explain, because now you're kind of losing me.
Sure. So the premise of the way we're going to be able to take office is if the voters elect me in both the primary and the general election, I am their duly elected and certified member of Congress. The Congress should allow that to take place. And I believe that if the Congress decides to vote in a popular vote, they can go ahead and do that based off of the precedent we're running off of.
Okay. All right. I get it. Why did you decide to? This is your first race for elected office. I understand you are a Bernie-crat from way back. You are a political person. You've been involved, and you're a Bernie Sanders supporter. So you're kind of with him on all the issues. Why did you start by running for Congress. I'll tell you, right now, we have a dire emergency around this country where state houses, state legislatures are doing so much damage to this country. We could use some really good progressives in the Florida state legislature. You didn't want to start there?
Well, that's a good question. Well, I definitely saw this opportunity as, you know, something that is very important to do. I believe an open seat in Congress doesn't come up every day. And based off of the precedence that was established, I said, you know what? If it happened before in America, America is the land of opportunity. That's what they tell us. You know, all dreams are possible. Look what happened in 2008. So I said, you know, let me go ahead, put myself out there, put myself before the voters and make my case. And, you know, God willing, if I'm able to win the nomination and go ahead in the general, we can make it happen. So that's why I decided to run in this campaign. I could have run for a lower office or a state representative position, but I felt that this is something I had to do and prove that, you know, the Generation Z is able to hold elected office and able to be represented in Congress, hopefully.
And you think at 22, you're ready to take on Congress, that you're more qualified than the other five candidates in the race who you know, range from never having held elected office before to, you know, serving many years in the county commission and in the state legislature?
Well, my experience being someone who not only went to a college for political science in this past May, but I've been a business owner. I've operated an insurance agency, like a self-employment agency. Then I'm doing real estate as well. I'm doing customer service. You know, I helped people, over 2,000 people in my experience in the business world. And, you know, I believe that those experiences and my professional background and my academic background, you know, gives me experience that is unlike any other candidate. And, you know, coming from the generation that's dealing with these massive shootings and all of everything that's going on in this country, from the Supreme Court to what's going on with abortion, I believe it's important to do this and to get my name out there to try to win the nomination and see where it goes from there.
Okay. Well, you know, I give you a lot of credit because you're taking on a big, this is a big undertaking, and you're a young guy and you're a first time candidate. And I probably would have started smaller, but hey, you know, it's America, still a free country. The last time I checked, unless you're a pregnant woman, and then not so much. Michelangelo Hamilton is with us. He's on Twitter at I am M Hamilton.
This is M Hamilton. This is and M Hamilton. My campaign account is Hamilton for FL.
Okay. I thought it was your name. I'm going to have to change it on the Chiron, although I get into trouble when I do that. I want to show real briefly I've been looking for a map of the newly drawn district and I couldn't find one, but you've got this one on your website. So
yes.
This is, it's a little different than the 22nd. This used to be the 22nd district. It's now the 23rd. And of course, Ron DeSantis had his hand in drawing this map. You could see the gerrymandering. You could see the way it sort of hooks around. It's almost like a U shape. Your office is in Boca Raton. Is that where you live or do you live down here in Broward?
Well, right now I'm in transitioning to move in the district. Right now I live in Davie, looking probably in the Margate, West Boca area. My campaign office is in Boca Raton, that's correct. And yes, that is the newly drawn 23rd Congressional District.
Okay. So I'm here in Coral Springs. You know, I talk to the listeners all the time about our proximity to Parkland. And now you can see it on the map. We are, you know, right next door. There are sisters. So we are dealing here in Coral Springs, certainly with the Parkland shooter who happens to be on trial this week. He pleaded guilty, thank goodness. And I thought that was going to spare us from reliving that horrific day. But no, because what happened is he pleaded guilty, but now it's the penalty phase. And this jury trial will decide if he gets life or death, basically. But this is a full-blown trial. Since they didn't have the original trial, they're going through every detail of it, making these poor kids and adults and families and the community relive what happened. So this is the first week of the trial, and it is We're all feeling it, I believe, and especially so soon after Uvalde and Buffalo, and those two shooters are still in the news. So as a young man, you've probably always known a life where these threats were around, where a mass shooter threat, those were the drills you had in school. When I was a kid, we just had regular old fire drills. How does that affect you? What do you think about, what do we do about this gun problem?
Well, that's a great question. You know, that is very true what you mentioned. I did grow up around a lot of Code Reds, a lot of active shooter training drills. And it's just horrible that we live in a country where we're supposed to be the land of opportunity, the land of freedom, but we're not really free because we have to, you know, spare ourselves from, you know, these mass shootings. So, I believe that we need to take more action. The president, you know, signed in legislation that I believe was a good first step. I believe we should look towards reinstating the 1990s assault weapons ban. We should continue to move in that direction, even into insuring guns. You know, if someone has to carry insurance for automobile vehicle, they should be able to do that for a weapon. We should be able to take a look at mandating there is safety storage when you purchase these weapons. There's a lot of things that I would support in Congress like that to ensure that we move forward in a direction that, you know, we can have a safe firearms in this country, and that's not causing all this massive, horrific, you know, violence that we're able to just continue to go down this way. It's unimaginable. Every other developed nation in this world has had measures like this before. They've dealt with this issue. It's just the gun lobby and the lobbyists in Washington don't want it that way. And we're going to work as hard as we can to combat that.
Now, the House today, believe it or not, passed a they're taking up an assault weapons bill. They haven't voted on that yet. But the House is doing a lot of big stuff this week. They passed the I forget what they call it, but something to codify the rights of same-sex marriage, of people to same-sex marriage. And today they passed one validating our right to contraception. Who would have ever thought they had to do this? We've taken some giant steps backwards in terms of the social contract in this country. I know you say you call yourself a Bernie-crat. How long have you been involved with Bernie Sanders, and is there anything you disagree with him on?
Well, I've supported Bernie since day one, since he ran in 2016. I was about 15, 16 years old.
That's not day one, just so you know. He's been in Congress for many, many years and been doing the great work. But since he started running for president, that's what you're talking about.
That is correct. That is correct. You know, I've come across him in 2015. A lot of people were undercutting him, saying that he can't make it, he can't do it. It's just too big of a race. And, you know, hearing what he had to say about the political establishment, how this country has moved away from, you know, being the country of the people and just of the ruling class, the wealthy, the elite. And hearing that perspective, you know, really motivated me to participate in his campaign in 2016. Was a part of a group of people in Florida who traveled to Iowa to knock on doors for the senator in his presidential campaign. We were able to see the caucuses, how they worked and everything. And then I helped out whatever I could in 2020 when I was in college and just graduated in the district in Florida Atlantic University this May for political science. So, you know, this is definitely a step into the right direction. I agree with the senator on a lot of different issues. Looking forward to work with him if I have the privilege of becoming the next representative from the state of Florida and, you know, other progressive Democrats in the House, and also next door Congresswoman Sheriff Liz McCormick, I believe, will be a good ally as well. So, you know, I definitely agree with Bernie Sanders on a lot of issues, especially with college debt. We should reduce college debt in this country, eliminate it. We should make public education not just a privilege, but a right in this country. Healthcare should be a right in this country as well. We should have a public option, at least bare minimum, you know. So these are a lot of issues I agree on, and I am supportive of the senator. That's correct.
That's good. As am I, and, you know, he's still speaking such truth to power, and it's a wonderful thing. So I think you're starting with your, you know, learning from the best. So keep that up. Michelangelo Hamilton, I'm nothing if not honest. I don't think you have a chance, but I love that you're running. I think it's awesome that you're stepping up to do this. It's going to give you invaluable experience for when you are old enough to hold the office. And you'll have already had at least one congressional campaign under your belt. Would you work in, you know, as a staffer for somebody, for whoever might win the office if you don't?
Well, what I will say is 2024 is around the corner. I will be eligible to hold that office in 2025. So I'm going to leave it at that. We'll see what happens. I'm going to leave it in the hands of the voters. So I would consider it, but I'm, you know, 2024 is around the corner. You never know.
You never know. I got to say, one of our regular listeners, one of my favorite listeners, is Sandy Scholes. She goes under the name of Environmental Coffee House because she does a program on YouTube called Environmental Coffee House, and she knows you. She do you know who I'm talking about, Sandy?
I think so. Yeah.
And she said you're great, and you know she thinks you're building name recognition for the future, and that you're very bright, and you know, just let me know in an email before the show started. She's like, I know him. He's a good guy. So you have Sandy's blessing as well.
Oh, thank you so much. Yes, good times. Good times. I appreciate it.
All right. Michelangelo Hamilton, that will get you to the website, by the way. So what did you say the other one is? HamiltonForFlorida.com?
Hamilton for Florida is my social media tag for the campaign, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook.
Gotcha.
If you want to get to the website, it's Michelangelo Hamilton. Hamilton.com. You can listen to my story there, read it all for yourself, what I believe in, what my issues are, and see if you're in the new 23rd Congressional District.
All right. And I will put all those links on the blog. I post the everyday show on the website at NicoleSandler.com, followed by the date. So it'll be /7-21-22. It'll all be posted there. I'll make sure you get a copy of it. And it was great to meet you. I'm thrilled that you stepped up and did this. It's really important for nothing else than to have the experience and get yourself out there so you're more prepared the next time.
I appreciate you having me on, and I'm looking forward to listening to all your other interviews with all the other candidates, and I appreciate it.
All right.
God bless.
Thank you so much. You take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Michelangelo Hamilton. Later on in the hour, we're going to hear from Alan Ellison. He's somebody who's run for office before, but he's never held office. So, and yesterday we spoke with Hava Holzhauer. Now I get her name right. Hava Holzhauer also has not held elected office, though she's a civil rights attorney. And we also, last week, I got to find his name. We spoke to the first candidate in the group last week. And what I'll do, once they're all done, either five or all six of them, however it turns out, I'm going to put together a special page. Put it up on the website with those five or six interviews. So at least if you're in this district, you can do your own comparison shopping. The primary is August 23rd. And actually, you even heard him say it. The mail-in ballots have gone out. Even though Governor Death Sentence up in Tallahassee tried to take away our right to vote by mail, apparently we can still vote by mail. So Trucker John, I just looked over and I see the YouTube chat room, and Trucker John says, I'm thinking about running for the House here in Nevada. Do it! And again, let me say, there's nothing wrong with running for the State House. Again, if you heard the show, when was it? When I had David Pepper on, it was last Wednesday. He's the former head of the Democratic Party of Ohio. And that's what the whole interview was about, how the Democrats really left the every state assembly, every state house free for the pickings, for the Republicans to pick them up. And that's how they're making all these changes, are on the state level and the extreme court. But you knew that. So anyway, think about that, too. Don't only set your sights on Congress. An easier way into Congress might be serving in the state legislature or state senate for a few terms. and then work your way up. Just saying, just a suggestion. All right, I'm Nicole Sandler. Today is, you know, just a sort of a freewheeling day. As I said, a little later in the hour, we'll talk to another one of the candidates. I haven't made up my mind yet who I'm voting for. So I, you know, I get it. I have more access than most people in that I can invite all the candidates on the show and talk to them and see who I get the best feel for from. You may not be able to do that, but you can at least do the research into who's running in your district and make the best choice. This is what primaries are about. And the primary, you say, that's the person I would love to see. Don't do the strategy, you know, strategery to think, well, I should vote for this one because that one has a better chance. Screw that. In the primary, vote with your heart. Vote for the person who you think would serve your district best. And then in the general, we have to vote against the Republicans because of all the shit they're doing. So I mentioned earlier today, the House of Representatives passed a bill. Now, it doesn't, we don't know what it'll do in the Senate, but it passed in the House. Now, the Democrats have a four-seat advantage in the House right now. That's all. And you know, the Senate is tied 50-50. Well, the House passed this right to contraception. We have a right to birth control. Do you believe that? And they're voting on it because Clarence Thomas, in his concurring opinion in the case that overturned Roe v. Wade, basically hinted that your right to birth control is coming next. Oh, and that same-sex marriage you enjoy now? Well, enjoy it while you can, because we're coming after that, too. This is what Clarence Thomas said. So, yeah, I know I give Nancy Pelosi a lot of grief. I give her a lot of credit this week, because she's bringing up legislation to get them all on the record. Every single one of those Congress critters, every single member of the House has to vote on where they stand. So they had to vote on marriage equality. And surprise, 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 yesterday, 47 Republicans voted with all the Democrats to codify Obergefell, basically to codify the Supreme Court decision that said, we have marriage equality in this country. You marry who you love, regardless of their gender. Okay, 47. Now, today, they voted on the Right to Contraceptive Act. I don't know the official name of it. Let me see if I can find it real quick. But anyway, the bottom line is they were voting on whether or not we have a right to the birth control pill or an IUD or whatever form of birth control contraception, medically prescribed contraception. Eight Republicans voted with the Democrats. That means all the rest of them, and I should pull it up. Let me see. I have all these open windows, and then I wind up inadvertently closing them. But I did have the House vote pulled up, and of course I closed it. Let me get it up here to find the roll call votes, just so you know for your own purposes. Go to house.gov. And then right there in front of you, there will be a thing that says recent votes, a tab. It says recent votes. So the Right to Contraception Act, that's what it's called. It passed. And again, the final vote was 228 to 195. 195 Republican members of Congress voted against our right to have contraception. To prevent a pregnancy. It's bad enough they won't let you end a pregnancy that's unwanted or problematic or the byproduct of rape or incest. But now they're saying, you know, we want to bone you, but if you get pregnant, tough shit. You need to carry that fetus to term and deliver it. Why anybody would ever vote for a Republican is beyond me. In fact, I'll tell you what, if there's any Republican listening and you want to answer that question, please call 954-889-6410 is the number, or you can Skype to me. I'm at Nicole Sandler, just all lowercase, all one word, on Skype. I would really like to know why anybody would vote Republican right now. It's inconceivable to me. All right, so there's other news. I want to get to some of it before we get to our next guest, Alan Ellison. And the news broke early this afternoon, or maybe it was late this morning. Joe Biden, you knew it was coming. Joe Biden tested positive for COVID.
Hey, folks, guess you heard. This morning I tested positive for COVID. But I've been double vaccinated, double boosted. Symptoms are mild. And I really appreciate your inquiries and your concerns. But I'm doing well. I'm getting a lot of work done. I'm going to continue to get it done. And in the meantime, thanks for your concern. And keep the faith. It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. Okay. All right. So there's Joe Biden. He looks, you know, he didn't have to be airlifted to Walter Reed. Just saying. And he's taking the antiviral drug, that Paxlovid, I think it's called. Anyway, he'll be okay. I heard one of the news spokesmodels saying, but he's 79 years old. What's going to happen? You know what? He is double vaccinated and double boosted. And therefore, and he's taking this Paxlovid. So chances are he'll be just fine. You know, as long as you take those precautions, people aren't necessarily dying from COVID. Some are. I said not necessarily. Most people, if you're double vaccinated, double boosted, you'll be okay. And that's, you know, that's good to know. Because, well, we need that. But, you know, back to the I don't understand who would vote for a Republican in this day and age. There are certain, you know, Republicans aren't known to put up the best candidates. Let's take a look at the Georgia Senate race that's on the ballot this year. You know, Raphael Warnock won that seat in a special election 2 years ago, but now that seat, the original seat that he was elected to fill, is now up. So he is back on the campaign trail, and his candidate is a famous athlete. It's a guy named Herschel Walker, and even I know, and I'm really not the football or sports fan, but Herschel Walker is running. He's got the Republican nomination to run for the U.S. Senate from the state of Georgia, taking on Reverend Raphael Warnock. It's absurd. It's crazy. And it seems like with each passing day, we learn more about Herschel Walker that we'd probably be better off not knowing. So apparently this clip that I'm about to play for you is from 2019. I don't know who he was talking to, but you know, this is a man who is a prolific liar. He must, you know, maybe that's why he likes the former guy so much. You know, they're peas of a pod. Anyway, this clip just shows Herschel Walker, the guy who lied about three children that he fathered who he doesn't acknowledge. And other things. He lies about everything, and that's what's going on in this clip. So let's just hear from good old Herschel Walker and see who the Republicans are putting up to run against the Reverend Raphael Warnock, who preaches at Martin Luther King's old church. He preaches from behind Martin Luther King's pulpit. Yeah. I mean, if you gotta be a preacher, that's the way to go. Herschel Walker, he's not. All right. What are you going to say, Herschel?
I worked for the poor law enforcement. Y'all didn't know that either, did you? I spent time at Quantico at the FBI training schools. Y'all didn't know I was
He spent time at Quantico? The FBI? No, he didn't.
Y'all don't care.
Because it's
anyway,
not true.
Yeah, I've been in law enforcement. So I grabbed my gun.
No, he wasn't
said,
in law
I
enforcement.
I kill him.
Yeah?
Herschel Walker, one of the highest I'm going to kill him.
You're
I got
kill
in
him.
David, one of my many. I took off on 183.
Yeah?
And I still remember the voice of Herschel. People been disrespecting you all the time. People are always doing stuff to you. You never done nothing to nobody. And all of a sudden, this other voice, Herschel, your parents and raised you. Did you stick to you? No, they didn't. Yes, they did. I thought I was losing my mind. As I got closer and closer to where I was going to be meeting this guy, I started to pray. I said, Lord, I need some help right now.
You think?
I said, I need you to help me. I said, I'm about to do something stupid right now. I need you to help me right now.
Okay, he prayed to the Lord.
I remember getting to this where I was going to meet him at. I got out of my car and I put my hand on my gun. As I was walking to this truck, before I could see the guy, I saw the sign on the back of his truck that said, Hunk, if you love Jesus. And that's what calmed me down.
Hunk, if you love Jesus. So he was going to kill the guy. He was ready to kill the guy. And he didn't. Because the sign said, honk if you love Jesus. That's like Donald Trump talking about his favorite Bible verse being 2 Corinthians, which obviously he never heard of before, because that's something I would say. I don't know the Bible. it's like 2 Corinthians, I think, is how to do it. He didn't know what he was talking about. This man claims to be. And so Herschel Walker didn't kill somebody because he saw the sign in the car that said, honk if you love Jesus. Well, just let me take a moment from our day and show you. Now, that was from 2019. So let me show you a bit of video of Raphael Warnock from 2020. This is not from this campaign. This is from the last campaign. But hey, it's, you know, the Fairness Doctrine used to require equal time. So let's get some equal time and let's find out who is up against Herschel Walker. His name is Raphael Warnock. Here we go.
It didn't matter what day of the week it was. Come 6 a.m., my dad would come through that door and say, put your shoes on, son. Get ready. If I asked why, he'd say, because there's something for you to do. I don't know exactly what it is yet, but be ready. I'm Reverend Raphael Warnock, and I've spent my entire life trying to be ready. I grew up right here in the Caton Homes housing projects of Savannah, Georgia. I had 11 sisters and brothers. We were short on money, but long on love and faith. Our parents taught us the value of hard work. Dad was a veteran, a small businessman, and a preacher. He spent most days picking up old junk cars that others had thrown away and hauling them to the local steel yard. He saw their value. And then Sunday morning, he preached to people who themselves felt discarded. He saw value in them too. Mom grew up in Waycross, Georgia, where she spent her summers picking cotton and tobacco. But she told us that we could do anything that we put our minds to. And so, with the love of my parents and the encouragement of my community, I went to Morehouse College on a full faith scholarship.
Of course.
I didn't know how I would pay for it, but I graduated college, earned a PhD degree, and 14 years ago, the kid who grew up in the projects was called to Martin Luther King Jr.'s pulpit. I became the senior pastor of Ebenezer Baptist Church.
Yes, he did.
Change still has a chance in the church that changed America.
He's senior pastor of one of the most prominent churches in America. Raphael Warnock not only preaches the gospel, but uses it as a platform for change.
Dr. King called it the drum major instinct, the urge to lead. Warnock has it and a sense of his place in this place.
Some might ask why a pastor thinks he should serve in the Senate. Well, I've committed my whole life to service and helping people realize their highest potential. I've always thought that my impact doesn't stop at the church door. That's actually where it starts. And I love this country. And I believe that what makes America so great is that we've always had a path to make it greater. Greater for people like the ones I've counseled at my church and others like them across this state. Like my father used to tell me every morning, whatever it is, be ready. And I think Georgia is ready. Ready to stand up for the family who's tried to do everything right. But when they receive one bad medical diagnosis, they realize that the cost of being sick is too much. Ready to fight for the dignity of workers who are paid too little and pushed aside as government works for Wall Street corporations. Ready because I realize that a kid who grows up in the projects today and struggling families across Georgia have it harder now than I did back then. I'm Reverend Raphael Warnock. And I'm ready. I'm ready to be your senator.
And he is. And he needs to be reelected. Can you imagine who in their right mind would vote for Herschel Walker over that man? And I get what Caroline in the chat room is saying. She says, I like Senator Warnock, but I think in government he should drop the rev part in the name of separation of church and state. Here's the thing. He doesn't preach, thank goodness, in the Senate. But boy, can he deliver a speech. And he knows what he's talking about. And he still, on weekends, goes home to Atlanta and preaches in Ebenezer Baptist Church. So that's part of who he is. And I don't begrudge him that. You know me, I'm not a religious person, but I don't feel talked down to by Raphael Warnock. I feel respected by him. And just like I do by Reverend Dr. William Barber, I feel energized by their faith because they're not preaching at me. And they respect my right to be an atheist. So I don't begrudge him that. I begrudge anybody who would vote for Herschel Walker. I said, honk if you love Jesus, so I didn't kill him. I'm just showing you the extremes. And if you vote your conscience, you vote for the right candidate, we'll be in good shape, I think. All right, I want to make sure I get Alan Ellison in, and then if we have time at the end of this segment, I will share with you a couple other things that I've saved up. As we prepare, I'm going to go start popping some popcorn. We recorded this yesterday, by the way, in case you're wondering. So, yes, I spoke with Alan Ellison yesterday. We taped this to air today. So, through the magic of videotape, let's do it. Here we go. I think. Well, I'm happy to welcome to the show today Alan Ellison, who is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for Congress from Florida's 23rd Congressional District. This is my district where I live. Now, I live in Coral Springs. I was living in the 22nd District, but due to the census and redistricting, this is now part of the newly drawn 23rd District of Florida. So, Alan Ellison, as I said, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. So I figured, because I do have this venue, that I would check in with everybody who's trying to run to replace my current Congressman, Ted Deutsch, who's not running for re-election. Now, you were in the Senate race to run against Marco Rubio until last month, and you decided to switch to this congressional race. Why'd you do that?
Well, you know, after a year and 6 months of running, one of the things that I wanted to do was make sure that our party was doing what was necessary to clear a path forward for candidates that were strong enough to face Rubio and Val Demings. She was in a very strong place to face him. And so I didn't want to create, a split between supporters. A lot of my supporters, I'm trying to get them to, support her for her election. And so I thought the best thing to do was to just pull out of the race and go into a race where I had a really good chance of winning as well as to represent the people in this particular district.
Okay, now you speak about this district, but first of all, your website, AlanEllison.com, AlanEllison.com. There, it's not there. It says campaign site coming. So there's not a whole lot
now.
Of information there on you. And when I did look you up, it says that you live in Sebring, Florida, which is not in this district. It's not even close. So where do you live here?
Actually, I lived here previously for about 4 years. But I have a business in Boca Raton, and my wife, she's a physician inside of the district. So we're actually in the process of moving back here.
I see. Because I was wondering why here if you live up north. But so you lived here. Your wife practices here. What kind of doctor is she?
Internal medicine, hospitalist.
Oh, very good. I know we need more doctors. So, Alan Ellison, you've run for office a number of times. Have you ever held elected office?
I've never held elected office. Actually, in 2018, I was a special election candidate. I ran following the death of Democratic nominee April Freeman. She passed away 30 days before the election. And so the Democrats had a special election, and I put my name in the hat and won 52% of the vote against three other contenders. And that left 28 days to face a three-term state senator who had been campaigning for a year. Mm-hmm. And he raised $1 million. And inside of 28 days, we were able to get 117,000 votes, which represented 40% of the vote. And the interesting thing that most people don't know about that race is that we got nearly 40% of the vote without my name on the ballot.
Okay. So, all right. Now, again, your website is not complete yet, so there's not a whole lot of information there. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you stand for, how you, what kind of a Democrat you consider yourself to be.
Well, thank you so much for the question. Yeah, we're actually in the process of switching the website over from a senatorial website, which covers issues that range 67 counties to a congressional district that only covers two. But I consider myself to be a progressive Democrat. I'm probably the most progressive, and not just because of the issues that I champion, but also the way that I put together policy to be able to see these policies through. Our campaign is about improving the quality of life for everyone. And what that means is taking a look at each individual issue. And there are 55,000 different issues that affect millions of people. But some of the ones, for the sake of time, is the gun safety. It's an issue that I champion very strongly because I am a survivor of gun violence. I had a gun put to my head, one to my back. When I was 10 years old, my cousin was a victim of gun violence. And when I went to the funeral, it was so traumatizing as a 10-year-old that I didn't go to another funeral for 28 years. Wow. And the very next funeral that I went to, it was a gun violence situation. I recently buried a nephew due to gun violence. So I've lost two nephews to gun violence, and I've lost an uncle. And so there is no other candidate that's going to fight for this particular issue like me. Another issue that I champion is gender pay inequality. I do this because I realize that there are millions of women, not only in this district, but across the country, that is literally being paid less than men for the same work, which is illegal based on the 1963 Equal Pay Act. So I am the only candidate that actually has a plan to not only close the gender pay gap, but also to go back to 1963 and to find that if there are any violations in the law, we want to be able to get women back pay for all of those violations of the law from corporations that have paid them less than men for the same work. Another issue that I am very
I have one of those. It goes back about 14, 15 years, but I have one of those that, you know, that I took over a job for someone else who was paid, I think, $90,000 a year and $90,000 a year. And they paid me 45. He was a man. I was a woman. But just sorry, I digress. But I think there are a lot of people out there who have those experiences.
They do. I ask the question quite often on my Twitter page, and I say, if you are a woman and you have, for whatever reason, found out that you have been paid less than a man on your job and you do the same work, I want to hear from you. And every single time, there are at least 1,200 people that come forward and they share their story, because there are corporations that have workplace policies that stipulate that you can't talk about what you make.
Right.
And so a policy like that is something that we would target to make sure that corporations don't do that, because not being able to talk about what you make with your peers is a sure way that it allows corporations to infringe upon the laws that existed when President Kennedy signed it in 1963, making it illegal. And then it was also reaffirmed in 1964 under the Civil Rights Bill. And so we have to make sure that people are being paid what they're worth. People are being paid what they're owed. And if they're not, we want to make sure these companies are held accountable and these people get the back pay.
Right.
Disabilities is something that is near and dear to my heart. I grew up the son of a pastor. My mother was a special needs instructor, so I spent a lot of time around people with disabilities. I am the only candidate that has a plan to not only increase the amount of resources that people with disability receives on a monthly basis, but there are millions of people that are being denied benefits each and every year, sometimes up to 8 years after they've already been deemed disabled by a medical physician. I want to make sure that if you have been deemed disabled by a medical physician, that you're not being denied by administrators. Because one of the things that happens is when you're disabled, the bills, they don't stop. They continue to roll in month after month. And when you're not able to pay your bills because you're disabled, it causes another problem, stress. And we don't need our fellow citizens being stressed on top of the stress that already exists. So we want to eliminate the stress. We want to cut the denial process down significantly and increase the amount of disability benefits that we receive. And again, the thing that makes me progressive is not just the issues that I champion, but it's my innovative ways in how I actually pay for a lot of these programs. I believe that we should decriminalize recreational cannabis use. Yes. And medical cannabis use. I actually have a bill that I put out on TikTok called the Higher Learning Bill. And the Higher Learning Bill works like this. If we decriminalize cannabis use, tax the sale of it, utilize the revenue from it, which would it would create $135 billion if we were to federalize it and make it legal across the country, we could take those new revenue funds and then use that to pay for up to 4 years of college education for anyone in the country who want to be able to go to college. I've crunched the numbers, and we would actually have revenue left over to do other things with. I believe that I am the only candidate in this race that has a plan to end veteran suicide, because, you know, right now there are simply not enough people in Congress that's thinking about these issues. I believe that we should have a stronger housing investment fund, and not just a fund that puts money into the hands of developers, but a fund that actually puts money into the hands of individual potential home buyers. I am a champion for universal basic income. We have seen that this pandemic put a lot of Americans in situations where a universal basic income would have been able to help them get through the months to be able to pay for groceries, be able to pay for housing assistance and things of that nature.
It sounds great. I'm sorry. There's a bunch of stuff here, and I look forward to you getting the website updated so we can get a full. And do you plan on listing your positions on these issues? Because that's something I've noticed. Progressives do that. Progressives want to tell you where they stand on all these issues. Some that are not in, you know, in the full public view. Even the more conservative ones, they don't put the issues on their website. So I hope you will, because it sounds like you got a lot of great ideas.
Yeah, I'm a political scientist. And so out of all of the candidates, I have the most expansive views on the most issues. I have held the most town halls of probably any candidate in the United States. Most certainly the candidates in my race. And I hold town halls because I understand that if I don't know who you are, if I don't know what keeps you up at night, if I don't even care, then I'm probably not going to be able to represent your interests. And so the reason that I do hold those town halls is because it not only gives an opportunity for me to learn about those issues so that I can go and put together policies to directly, positively impact your world, but it also gives the people an opportunity to see who I am, what I'm about, and where I stand on the issues. A lot of candidates won't do this because they are afraid to put their ideas right out. A lot of them don't have ideas. A lot of them don't have vision. And I believe that if you're going to be running for the United States Congress, you should at least have a vision of what you expect this country to look like.
Absolutely. So, Alan Ellison, you've run for a few offices in the past. You say you're a political scientist. What is your professional background? What have you been doing all these years?
My professional background is very diverse. Actually, I'm here right now in my manufacturing facility. I'm a cosmetologist, entrepreneur, business owner. I have a manufacturing business that produces about 500 different products in the hair care, skin care, and personal hygiene space. I have a salon spa where I still do hair.
Wow.
Yeah.
I need a haircut. Just saying.
I'll be more than happy to do that. I do a barbershop tour and salon tour where I go to different shops around the state. And I'm going to start doing that more in this district. But I go around the state talking about policy and helping people better understand how policy directly impacts their world, while at the same time giving them a nice haircut or giving them a nice hairstyle.
Awesome.
So I'll be doing a lot of that here. It's called the Allen Ellison Barbershop and Salon Tour. The other thing that I do is I'm a humanitarian. I have a foundation. We help about 150,000 people in Africa to be able to be fed without having to pay for anything. We bring in micronutrients and seeds on a farm that we have over there, a 12-acre farm where we grow about 8 different food crops to feed 150,000 people for free.
Wow.
Our foundation is privately owned, privately financed, and we do a lot to help children pay for college education, seniors to be able to pay for light bills whenever they are, you know, on hard times and things of that nature. So, like I said, I have a very diverse background. Everything interests me. And if you follow me on TikTok, you'll pretty much see the diversity in my background of all the things that I'm into, all the things that I do.
Terrific. Well, Allen Ellison, of course, we need a number of changes here in Florida, most notably in the governor's office. Do you have a preferred candidate between the two Democrats who are running? I'm guessing you would support either one of them over Ron DeSantis, but are you siding with either one?
You know, I know both, and I support both. I think that either one of our top Democratic candidates would be a great addition to the governor's mansion, because what we have right now is an individual who literally is flourishing in fascist policies. Mm-hmm. A lot of the governor's policies are not moving our society and our state forward. They're actually very regressive. And I believe that anytime we have leaders in government that is moving our society backwards, we have to do all that we can do to get those individuals out of office. Because if we go backwards, then that means that we're making things good or better for some. The point of it all is to be able to make things better for everyone. And you can't do that going backwards. You have to do that going forward. And so, you know, Ron DeSantis, you know, he's someone that is pandering a lot to his base, and that base is growing fast. This time last year, there were 97,000 more Democrats than there were Republicans. The other day I looked and crunched the numbers. There are 180,000 more registered Republicans. They are actually registering at a higher rate than Democrats, 3-1.
Yeah,
actually.
I know.
So one of the things that I'm trying to get people to do is to go to vote.org, check your status, register to vote, and get as many people, like-minded people, to register and vote as well. I believe the party put about maybe $2 million into the voter outreach component of the party. But we have to do more. And if we are not doing more at the leadership level, then at the grassroots level, we have a responsibility to make sure that we are stimulating as many people as we can. Our campaign built a grassroots movement. We're reaching about 10 million people every month without spending a single dime on ads. It's simply by engaging with the public in the way that I do.
Great. Well, and next week is the deadline for registration to be able to vote in the primary, which is happening August 23rd. So we're just a month away. Vote.org, go there and check. Even if you think you're registered, make sure that you haven't been purged, because this is Florida, after all, and they are Republicans running things. So don't take anything for granted. Check, make sure your registration is in good standing and that you're ready to vote on August 23rd. And please vote. Allen Ellison, thank you so much. It was great to meet you. Get that website up and running, because you've only got a few weeks. And best of luck. I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you so much. It'll be ready.
And it is ready. It's up now. So you can go to Allen Ellison. .com, and it's there. And he's got all the all the issues and everything. You know, here's the thing. Here's why I think this exercise is important. Because on paper, you know, here's a guy who's run for a few different offices, never served, was living in Sebring, Florida, which is, you know, way north of here. It's not even in South Florida. I wouldn't have looked twice at him, yet he sounds pretty great, doesn't he? So far, I've met some great candidates. We had W. Michael Trout was the first one. We had Hava Holzhauer yesterday, and today we met Michelangelo Hamilton and Alan Ellison. Probably not tomorrow because we got the hearing to go through tomorrow, but on Monday we'll hear from Ben Sorensen, who's the vice mayor of Fort Lauderdale, who's also running, and we'll see if I ever hear from Jared Moskowitz. I have a feeling I won't. Anyway, all right, I'm going to cut this off here and go get dinner ready because we have a date at 8 o'clock Eastern for this hearing tonight, and we'll go over it all tomorrow. All right. Thanks for listening, everyone. Go pop the popcorn. Do whatever you need to do. And I'll see you back here tomorrow. Hopefully a lot wiser about what happened on January 6th. All right. I'll leave you with the news. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
More than 85% of Americans are going to be hit with temperatures above 90 degrees throughout the weekend. This has driven state and local leaders to issue heat emergencies and offer resources to residents to mitigate the high temperatures. The heat waves aren't only here in the U.S. Deadly conditions are all over Europe, where records have been smashed and 19 European countries remain on extreme danger alerts for wildfires. President Biden on Wednesday stopped just short of declaring a national climate emergency, but he did unveil a series of new executive actions to confront the ever-strengthening crisis following yet another stab in the back from Joe Manchin. Biden stopped short of declaring a national climate emergency on Wednesday, but did say,
"As president, I have a responsibility to act with urgency and resolve when our nation faces clear and present danger. And that's what climate change is about. It is literally, not figuratively, a clear and present danger."
And then he unveiled a $2.3 billion plan to help communities deal with extreme heat. Congress has been very busy in the past couple of weeks, and that's expected not to let up until they break for their August recess. Some of the stuff they're working on? Well, the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday night, just after 10 p.m. Eastern, approved an assault weapons ban. It was a day-long contentious markup filled with insults and partisan bickering. But this marks the first time the House Judiciary Committee has marked up an assault weapons ban in almost 30 years. 25 Democrats voted in favor of the bill, led by Congressman David Cicilline of Rhode Island, while 18 Republicans on the panel opposed it. The question now is whether or not Democratic leaders can pass the assault weapons ban on the floor. The bill could come up for a vote as early as next week, yet as of now, the Democrats just don't have the votes to pass it. Again, Nancy Pelosi only has a 4-seat margin, and there are already 4 Democrats expected to vote against the bill. Representatives Jared Golden of Maine, Henry Cuellar of Texas, and 2 lame ducks, Kurt Schrader, who was defeated in a primary, and Ron Kind, who's not returning. There are a few other Democrats who are still noncommittal or undecided. How can you be undecided over an assault weapons ban? Just asking. But there's lots more, too. The House yesterday also passed the Respect for Marriage Act and had the support of 47 Republicans. So the next stop for this bill is the Senate, where Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer already put it on the legislative calendar, which means it should move fairly soon. For some reason, though, corporate America is mostly trying to stay neutral on this issue. The full House today will move to the Right to Contraception Act. This would protect a person's ability to access contraceptives and to engage in contraception, and to protect a healthcare provider's ability to provide contraception and information regarding contraception. CNN correspondents have been whipping the vote, and they say as of Wednesday night, there were 4 likely yes votes, 8 no votes, 16 undecided, and 22 who didn't respond to the question. Just as a reminder, they need 10 Republicans to go along with all the Democrats. Well, maybe we can smoke them if we got them. Senate Democrats today are expected to do the unexpected, introduce legislation that he's been working on with Senators Cory Booker and Ron Wyden that would remove marijuana from the federal list of controlled substances. Finally, would also regulate and tax it, expunge all federal criminal convictions, and prohibit discrimination in banking of people and businesses with ties to the cannabis industry. This comes at a time when just 4 months out from the midterms, polling has shown a steady increase in the public support for legal weed. The federal government, of course, is lagging behind the states. 38 states and the District of Columbia have legalized access to marijuana. 19 states and D.C. allow recreational use. Well, finally, the House Oversight Committee released a report Wednesday about these newly uncovered draft memos and secret emails that seem to confirm that the Trump administration pushed to add that citizenship question to the last census to discourage non-citizens from participating in the count. The alleged goal was to cause heavily Democratic areas to be undercounted, thereby changing congressional apportionment to benefit Republicans. Trump's then Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross had told Congress that the question was needed to get better data and help enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1965. The Supreme Court ruled in 2019 that the claim, quote, appears to have been contrived, you think? And then the Trump administration had to drop the question from the 2020 census. You shouldn't be surprised by anything anymore. Not even this. The bipartisan group of senators who've been working on an Electoral Count Act reform bill unveiled their proposed legislation yesterday. One bill would make it harder for politicians to reject state electors and not certify election results. Another would increase criminal penalties for threats against election workers. Negotiations on the bill have been led by Susan Collins and Joe Manchin, and they propose explicitly stating that the vice president's role in tallying electoral college votes is strictly symbolic. The changes would also raise the bar for lawmakers wishing to challenge an election result. The senators urge members of both parties to, quote, support these simple, common sense reforms. I guess now it's Rudy's turn. A New York judge has ordered Rudy Giuliani to testify on August 9th before the Fulton County, Georgia special grand jury investigating possible 2020 election interference by the former guy and some of his allies. Because Giuliani and some others who've received subpoenas don't live in Georgia, Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis had to get judges in their home states to order them to appear. Giuliani, Trump's former private lawyer, pushed debunked voter fraud claims to a Georgia State Senate subcommittee and the public, according to Willis, in her petition seeking his testimony. She also said there's evidence that he was part of a multi-state coordinated plan by the Trump campaign to influence the election results in Georgia and elsewhere. And finally, the January 6th Select Committee's primetime hearing tonight, the season finale, if you will, though not the series finale, will center on the former guy's refusal to act while an angry mob of his supporters stormed the Capitol as they tried to stop certification of Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. Beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern tonight, airing in prime time on all the major networks except for the fake news channel, and led by panel members Elaine Luria and Adam Kinzinger, tonight's hearing will detail Trump's actions from the moment he finished his speech on the Ellipse to when he released a video statement some 3 hours later. Yes, it's the 187 missing minutes. The hearing will feature testimony from individuals who are in contact with Trump, both inside and outside the West Wing, as the orange one ignored pleas to tell his supporters to leave the Capitol. Although there's more to come, this is a big finale of sorts, and the committee is expected to wrap up with this bold conclusion. Not only did Donald Trump do nothing despite repeated entreaties by senior aides to help end the violence, but he sat back and enjoyed watching it. The popcorn's already popping. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.